This is WKSU News. I'm Kabir Bhatia. When Apollo 11 launched 50 years ago, it was propelled by a liquid hydrogen-fueled launch vehicle called the Centaur, which wouldn't have existed without decades of work by scientists at what's today NASA Glenn Research Center. One of those scientists was Joe Nieberding, and I recently spoke with him about Cleveland's role in the space race.
The center has a history prior to Apollo that few people remember. There was a program called Ranger. They were the first spacecraft to hit the moon, just to show we could get there and find it and hit it. So it had cameras, and you could see the pictures getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and all of a sudden it went blank. And then we launched five successful lunar orbiters, which eventually mapped out about 97% of the lunar surface, looking for suitable landing sites for the Apollo astronauts. And then there were people at the time that were concerned that the moon had deep dust pits, and they were afraid that the astronauts landed, they could be landing in dust pits. So the only vehicle powerful enough to land robotic landers was our Centaur here, which I worked on, and we launched seven successful launches. Five spacecraft succeeded, landed robotically, scooped up the soil, took the first pictures from the surface of the moon. And in addition, of course, the Centaur had the technology of using hydrogen as a fuel. It was the most efficient fuel you could, but it was very difficult to handle. This lab flew a hydrogen-powered airplane over Lake Erie in 1957 to demonstrate the fact that hydrogen could effectively be used as a viable fuel. And that led to the Centaur development starting in 1963. When I came here, they offered me two positions. I could work in the chemistry lab, and I hated chemistry, or I could work on something called Centaur. I had no idea what it was, but I said, give me that. And I was involved in calculating the trajectories. How do you get from Earth to Moon? How do you send the surveyor missions? How much propellant does it take? Which way do you have to fly to the Moon? And I'll recount an incident. I started in July of 1966. In May of 1966, the first Atlas Centaur launched the first surveyor to the moon. It was covered by the networks. Walter Cronkite covered it, the launch, the landing. It was really a big deal. So then I started here in July of 1966, 3 months later, and I was sitting over in the Development Engineering Building, 1314, and Jet Propulsion Lab, who had developed the surveyor spacecraft, were here. And they laid a giant map out on the wall. It was probably 30 feet long. And they were working with our people, were laying out the targets for the next five or six landings. And it was only then that I realized that the people I saw back in May in Mission Control with Walter Cronkite were the people right here. I was sitting next to them. It didn't sink into me the significance of that Centaur program until then. I worked a lot with the Air Force down in Florida, called Range Safety. Those are the folks assigned the responsibility if the rocket launches and goes off course before it can threaten populated areas, they will destroy the vehicle. So I worked very carefully with them for many years, making sure they knew which way we were going to fly. Do you want to befriend those people? You take them to dinner. Now, that was great. And then I got to go down to launches. I was in Mission Control down there for, I think, about 65 launches over 35 years. Later on, I headed up the group that did the trajectory calculations, and then I headed up a group that controlled all the responsible, all the software on board, the guidance that would take you to the targets. In the latter years, in addition to that, I did the advanced missions of planning people to go to Moon, Mars, and so forth.
So was the Apollo program itself the thing that motivated the Centaur team?
In addition to the Apollo goal, every launch we had our own motivation. In parallel with the manned program, the unmanned program was going on and exploring the planets for the first time, launching the early weather satellites, launching the early Intelsat television satellites. Our technologies were taken by the Apollo program, hydrogen, so forth. So it was going on in parallel. So we were, as part of the United States and NASA, we were super motivated for the country, for Apollo, but in parallel, we were equally motivated to be successful in scientific, robotic, unmanned missions that we were launching. It was a constantly changing scene because there were still a lot of unknowns. The spacecraft was always too heavy for us to carry. So we would negotiate with them, how do we get the weight down? You know, you'd fly different trajectories depending on the weight of the payload. We had some early test failures, so the vehicle had to be redesigned a couple times. And, of course, the computers were, by today's standards, were primitive. We did, believe it or not, a lot of our calculations on a slide rule. Show that to kids today, and they'll think it's the fanciest ruler they ever saw.
And for you, the work that happened here under the Centaur program and that ended up with the Apollo program, what do you think the legacy is?
To have liquid hydrogen, you had to keep the propellant at 423 degrees below zero. So you had to develop advanced insulation techniques. The metals at the time, the tubing, would all fracture under the cold, so they had to develop new metal alloys. And these spinoffs have been in the economy for decades, ever since they were developed. And even New Horizons, which went out to Pluto recently, was launched on a Centaur, an updated version, but it's the same Centaur we developed back in 1963. Every spacefaring nation right now has a hydrogen-powered upper stage, the Russians, the Europeans, the Indians. So the technology lives on, so you can't help but say, boy, I was a small part of the team that did that. In later years, I worked in Russia for a while, and you, I don't know if you're aware, the Russians had a parallel to the Apollo program. They launched it four times, unmanned, all four failed. So they destroyed the vehicles, destroyed all the records, never even admitted that they had such a program until Glasnost. But I got to know several of the Russians, and I asked them, how did you feel when Apollo 11 landed? They said, we cried. And I said, you know, because you lost the race? He says, no. Because humans finally have done it. I'll never forget that.